Radio Prague News.
The industry minister is asking for another 1.5 billion crowns in government support for the proposed Hyundai car plant. Two Dutch nationals are under investigation for allegedly looking to spread neo-Nazi propaganda in the Czech Republic, and former Prime Minister Miloš Zeman plans to publish a political horror story ahead of the 2006 elections. Industry Minister Milan Urban is to ask the cabinet for an additional 1.5 billion crowns to be set aside for the repair and construction of industrial zones and infrastructure near Ostrava, the proposed site of a new $1.2 billion Hyundai car plant. The cabinet has already earmarked 3.25 billion crowns in relation to the proposed venture of the South Korean carmaker. Hyundai reportedly wants a four-lane highway built from Ostrava to neighboring Slovakia, where its affiliate, Kia Motors, has a factory. The South Korean investment has become a focal point for political debate over the Czech Republic's system of incentives for attracting foreign investment, with the main opposition Civic Democratic Party calling for a major reduction in incentive packages. Two Dutch nationals detained in the Czech Republic on Saturday are under investigation for allegedly promoting racist ideologies. The men were detained en route to a neo-Nazi concert held in the Czech town of Zlata Olešnice, about 160 kilometers north of Prague. Police shut down that concert, which had been booked as a private birthday party and was attended by some 140 skinheads and far-right extremists. Police made several arrests and seized clothing and electronic media promoting racist ideals. Along with the two Dutch nationals, at least one Czech is to be charged with inciting racial hatred. British investigators have revealed that Czech national Michal Pech had ingested cocaine before shooting his ex-girlfriend, Claire Brunel, dead this September. Mr. Pech, a former security guard at the London boutique where Ms. Brunel worked the perfume counter, had been under a restraining order. A British pathologist said it could not be determined exactly when Mr. Pech took the cocaine and to what degree he would have been influenced by the drug. After shooting his ex-lover, he turned the gun on himself. Former Czech Prime Minister Miloš Zeman is writing a book on the recent history of the Social Democratic Party, which he plans to publish ahead of next year's parliamentary elections. Earlier this year, Mr. Zeman published his memoirs entitled The Mistakes I Made in Politics, in which he pulled few punches in judging other politicians, for example, labeling his one-time protege Stanislav Gross an ignoramus with no ideas of his own. Mr. Zeman's often vulgar accounts of behind-the-scenes dealings were a hit with the general public. His next book, The Rise and Fall of the Social Democrats, is to be, quote, a political horror. And finally, a look at the weather. Light, freezing rain could give way to the first snowfall of winter in the coming days, with overnight lows of minus 4 degrees Celsius expected. That's the end of the news. I'm Brian Kennedy. Stay tuned now for the rest of our program.
You're tuned to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio, with me, Peter Smith. Coming up, the Czechs are pushing for more freedom to work inside the expanded EU, but will their wishes be granted? Also, addressing the problems associated with an increasingly elderly population, and it's been a vintage year for Czech wine. And in Talking Point, washing away the legacy of the communist over-industrialization of North Bohemia. Please stay tuned. When Czech politicians were convincing voters to say yes in the referendum 2 years ago on joining the EU, one of the things they promised was that Czech workers would be able to find a job anywhere in the European Union. But with the exception of the United Kingdom, Ireland and Sweden, all established EU members introduced temporary legal barriers against a feared influx of workers from the East. No such thing has materialised in the three countries that allowed free movement of labour, and that's one of the reasons why Czech politicians are now calling for the removal of those restrictions in the rest of the old EU. Pavel Horáková reports.
The old EU15 will be deciding next April whether to keep labour restrictions for workers from the 10 new member states. Czech politicians have joined the EU Employment Commissioner, former Czech Prime Minister Vladimír Špidla, in his call for a total and fast removal of all obstacles preventing people from finding a job in another EU country. Foreign Minister Cyril Svoboda argues that Czech workers present no threat to any other labour market in the old EU15.
In my view, the problem is totally artificial one. In my view, the free movement of persons is a fundamental freedom of the European Union, and the Czechs, they do not bring any problem to any labour market in Europe. In my view, that's just a question of courage, of the political courage to liberalise the labour market, to be open to everybody. That's only a solid and fair solution to all member states. That's a good example in my country. We have got in my country officially 50,000 Ukrainians, and unofficially maybe between 100,000 or maybe 200,000, and nothing has happened, nothing. So the labor market is solid, and the problem with the unemployment is not the problem with the Ukrainians. So that's my permanent message. The question is just the political one.
The United Kingdom opened its labour market on the day that new 10 members joined, on May 1, 2004. Andy Burham is the UK's Parliamentary Under-Secretary of State.
Well, the British experience has been very positive. Around about 15,000 people from the Czech Republic have come to work in our labour market. And it's our view that that's good for Britain, but also good in the long term for the Czech Republic, in terms of giving people an experience of our country, and that both of us will benefit from it. So we think it's been good all round.
The Czech Prime Minister Jiří Paroubek has raised the question of relaxing the restrictions on free movement of workers at meetings with the Austrian Chancellor Wolfgang Schüssel and the French President Jacques Chirac. During talks with President Chirac last month, Prime Minister Paroubek suggested an exception could be made for Czech university graduates. Agnès Leclerc from the French Ministry of Employment, Labour and Youth Integration.
Il n'y a pas de position arrêtée quant à la décision qui sera prise au 1er mai 2016.
It is not clear yet what will be decided at the end of the first two-year transition period next year. As for university graduates, I believe the talks concern people who have studied in France and who could afterwards seek employment in the country. The transition periods don't restrict the movement of students. We are trying to attract foreign students and enable them to enter our labour market during and after their studies.
Although bilateral talks between individual countries are important, the Czech Foreign Minister Cyril Svoboda says it's not the preferred solution.
We are trying to raise a point on all our bilateral meetings, but at the very beginning I am against making some special arrangement between, for example, Czech Republic and Germany, or Czech Republic and Austria, so because we are asking the European solution. And I believe that the new assessment of the Commission will be encouraging to all member states and helpful for the new ones. So we need to stick together.
The countries regarded as most likely to consider opening their labour markets next year are Finland, the Netherlands, Belgium, Portugal and Spain.
Pavlo Horáková there. The elderly have been making the headlines here in the Czech Republic due to the reports that the number of Czech centenarians, that's people aged over 100, has risen dramatically in the last decade. What's more, the population in general is set to get a lot older in the next few generations, and the state wants to begin preparing Czechs now for a greyer future. Ian Willoughby has been looking into this issue and joins me now in the studio. Ian, about these centenarians, what kind of numbers are we talking about here?
Well, Peter, a decade ago there were just a few dozen Czech centenarians. Now there are around 350. That's according to figures just released by the Ministry of Social Affairs. It's not quite Japan. In Japan there's 25,000 people over 100 years old. That's six times as many per capita as the Czech Republic. But still, in this country there has been a really marked rise in the oldest of the old.
Is it usual, like everywhere, that many of these centenarians tend to be women?
It is indeed. There's almost 300 of this country's 350 centenarians are female. And by the way, the oldest Czech woman this year celebrated her 108th birthday. and she's been drawing a pension since 1962. The fact that only 60 of the country's citizens aged 100 plus are men has been described as alarming by a man called Jiří Hojdecker from the Social Security Authority. And he was speaking this week, just days after the death of the oldest living Czech man, and he was a very ripe and very old 106.
I wonder what he was eating. But anyway, the number of centenaries is quite interesting. But the real question, I suppose, is the ageing of the population in general.
That's right. Well, they predict that by 2050, a full one-third of Czechs will be 65 or older. And that leads to two big questions. The first, of course, who's going to pay their pensions? That issue hasn't really been addressed by the politicians. They're leaving it until after the next elections. All the parties have agreed on that. But the second question is the huge issue of the impact that the greying of the population will have on the shape of Czech society, because the Czech Republic, with a third of the population over 65, is, of course, going to look extremely different from today's Czech society.
Yes, well, as I understand as well, that the state must really begin preparing for this right now. What's being done?
Well, the Ministry of Social Affairs this week has been talking about a plan to teach elementary school children about the ageing process and the lives of the elderly. They say that's something that's been neglected in the past. And there's a second idea, that is to encourage young Czechs to take part in providing care for seniors. And the ministry says that would foster intergenerational ties. And this proposal could be well-timed because there have been reports that the young Czechs are losing the traditional respect for the elderly. And there was one study in Tuesday's papers that said 20% of the over 70s have actually suffered verbal abuse. And kind of strangely, a third of respondents to this, or in this study, said that the participation of old folks in politics should be limited. And that even that despite the fact that the numbers of the old are growing.
Okay, the shape of things to come there. Thank you, Ian Willoughby. When it comes to alcoholic beverages, Czechs are famous for their beer and beer drinking. But increasingly, every year, Czechs can boast better and better wines produced in the regions of southern Moravia. In 2005, thanks to an Indian summer, the quality of the Czech harvest was exceptionally good. We spoke to Martin Puček from the Czech Union of Wine Growers. He explains how a rainy summer and a gorgeous autumn combined to enrich this year's grapes.
It wasn't a very hot summer, but what we saw in the autumn was unusual. Weeks of beautiful sunshine. The weather had a major impact on the final taste of the wine. First, the grapes were waterlogged from the rain. Then extensive sun did the trick. The sun prompts the creation of sugars in the grapes, leading to all kinds of aromatic flavors. In general terms, you can say the higher the sugar content, the higher the quality of the wine, the greater array and mix of aromatic elements. In terms of the taste, this year's conditions were ideal.
But if quality went up in this year's harvest, overall productivity unfortunately suffered. The summer drizzle had a flip side, infestation. And there was also extensive damage from starlings, which all contributed to a poorer harvest. Czech wine producers now also face a more competitive market within the European Union, which has seen the arrival of cheaper foreign wines, so there have been some headaches. To combat cheaper imports, some 30 Czech producers recently established a new umbrella label called St. Martin's. According to Martin Puček, the label has already recorded success. Wine tasters at this year's harvest celebrations were pleased.
Hlavně pátek 11. listopadu, tedy mladé víno svatomartinské.
I was at an event on the main square in Brno just last Friday, where many tasters tried the St. Martin brand and seemed quite happy and satisfied. I was also at an event in Prague, and of the many wines I tasted, I found nothing that would offend the palate.
If you want to taste Czech or Moravian wines, the question most often asked is, what should I try? Martin Puček recommends the choice you make always be based on local reputation. For tourists, he recommends wines traditionally found only here, for example, in southern Moravia's Znojmo or Mikulov, the Czech Republic's two most famous wine regions.
Pokud budu za sebe mluvit, tak já jsem z Moravy, tak rozhodně bych doporučil víno z Moravy.
I'm from Moravia, so naturally I recommend wines from the area. You can have a Cabernet Sauvignon or a Chardonnay anywhere, but you can only get Veltlínské Zelené or Riesling Vlašský from Znojmo or Mikulov here. Those are two types I'd recommend.
Touto cestou bych šel a doporučil zákazníkům tyto odrůdy.
Dobrá medicína, napísat mi radšej víno, to je dobrá medicína. Prečo sa ty za mnou vláčiš, keď ma ani neopáčiš, ani večer, ani ráno, jaký si ty sprostý jano, ani večer, ani
Oh yes, music from the wine-producing region of South Moravia. You're tuned to Radio Prague. That's the sound of German troops marching through Prague's Wenceslas Square on the 15th of March 1939. On Thursday, we'll be bringing you a special programme marking the anniversary of one of the most tragic episodes in those early days of the Nazi occupation. On the 28th of October 1939, Czechoslovak Independence Day, Czech students took to the streets to demonstrate against the occupation. The protest was brutally suppressed and literally hundreds of students were arrested. One, Jan Opletal, was seriously wounded and later succumbed to his injuries. The Nazis were brutally uncompromising. On the 17th of November, 9 students, seen as the ringleaders, were executed and over 1,000 were sent to concentration camps. For the rest of the war, all Czech universities were closed and the illusion of normality was shattered for good. The anniversary is marked worldwide as International Students' Day. The day has a further significance for Czechs. It was the 50th anniversary of these events in November 1989 that marked the Velvet Revolution, the beginning of the end of communist rule. Students had gathered to remember 1939 and then marched in peaceful protest to the centre of Prague. It was an echo of the events of half a century before. Protests were put down by force, but the regime was too weak to hold out and the forces of change eventually won through. In past programmes, we've often looked at the drama of the Velvet Revolution, but this year, in our special 17th of November programme, we'll be retelling the story of the tragedy of November 1939. That will be on Thursday instead of our regular programme. But moving on with today's show, North Bohemia was once a member of a most unlucky club. Together with neighbouring areas of Germany and Poland, the region was considered part of the so-called Black Triangle, named for its unenviable position as one of Europe's most polluted areas. But since the fall of communism, the region has been dealing with the consequences of unrestrained industrial growth that poisoned its skies and depleted its once thick forests. In this week's Talking Point, Eric Martin visits the region to find out if it can lose its Black Triangle tag.
Miroslav Vaniek experienced firsthand the environmental tragedy that was unfolding in North Bohemia. He's a native of Teplice, a city near one of the region's coal-burning power plants. As a teenager in the late 70s, he spent 2 years in and out of the hospital with respiratory problems. He says it cost him nearly a year of high school. Mr. Vaniek heads Prague's Oral History Center and is the author of a book on Czechoslovakia's environmental history. But he describes the story of North Bohemia's environment from a perspective of a teenager on a hospital bed.
I saw the kids, which were every day with the red eyes, with some horrible allergies. I spoke with the doctors who got to their hospitals. The kids were so bad that they prognosed them only, for example, 2 years for the living.
But that was decades ago. Since the fall of the communist regime that turned North Bohemia into the Czech Republic's heavy industry powerhouse, the region has been working to recover from the damage. Experts, like Mr. Vaniek, say there has been a sizable improvement in the region's environment. But, they say, there is much work still to be done.
I think it was visible in the early 90s how quick the situation in northern Bohemia and all the Czech Republic is better and better, because we left the stupid idea to produce the steel and coal and power and the chemical industry. And you can see that now the situation in Teplice, for example, in Ústí and other towns from North Bohemia is better, for example, than in Prague.
The chief pollutant that put North Bohemia in the Black Triangle was sulfur dioxide, a byproduct of burning brown coal. It was not only part of the reason why in the 1980s people in North Bohemia were twice as likely to suffer from respiratory infection as the national average, it also caused acid rain, which in turn all but decimated many of the forests in the Krušné Mountains. Professor Mirka Blaškova now describes the region with a different color.
The Black Triangle is not black, but we call it that is dark green. It means improvement exists, but is still something to improve.
Miss Blaškova is a geology professor at North Bohemia's J.E. Purkinje University in Ústí nad Labem. But when she was an environment ministry official a few years after the fall of communism, her main task was to tackle air pollution.
It was the main impact to the human health, especially to the health of child. There was a lot of children diseases and mortality as well.
The professor says installing pollution filters on power plants made great strides at reducing sulfur dioxide. But rising car use has held off reduction of other pollutants, and the region is still the country's industrial center. But there's still one area where Ms. Blaškova says she sees none of the vestiges of the communist-era pollution.
The forest in the North Bohemia, especially in the Krušné Hory Mountains, there was a really disaster. The whole area, the trees died. After that, there was revitalization. The country, there was planted new trees. And now you can see the nice forest, and you can't see the old dying trees, what was before, what we call it, the dying fingers.
I'm emerging from a forest as it reaches the edge of the town of Děčín in North Bohemia. I've spent a few hours of the day in these woods, and haven't seen any of the signs of the dead fingers that Mirka Blaškova was telling me about. Those are the carcasses of trees that have been killed by acid rain.
Although mountain forests have been revived, the city of Most shows that some damage is irreparable. During the 1970s and 80s, the centuries-old city was replaced by open-pit coal mines. A new city of densely packed concrete apartment buildings now stands a few kilometers away. Mr. Vaniek says that as a result of Soviet pressure to industrialize, hundreds more towns and villages met the same fate.
They destroyed all the old most, which was created in the Middle Age, and they created new most like 5 kilometers from the right center. It means that the people lost not only good environment, but they lost their home too. And they lost something what was there for a century. And they lost the soul of the town.
That's the hum and clack of electric trolley buses in Ústí nad Labem. In this industrial city, in the heart of North Bohemia, those buses are here to ease pollution. I'm in a downtown square where you can see the factory smokestacks that pump smog into the air here. That's air that's tinted with a thin gray haze. But a little haze in Ústí nad Labem is a world of difference from the 1980s. Deputy Mayor Tomáš Jelinek recalls when city residents were often alerted because of dangerously high pollution levels.
Já si vzpomínám v 80. letech, když jsem byl ještě vlastně student.
I do remember the 1980s. I was a high school student and later a college student. And I do remember so-called smog days, or even weeks, that we had in Ústí nad Labem. And it was very unpleasant. We managed to do away with these things, and we managed to do away with big environmental pollutants. And by that I mean the open pit mines.
Životního prostředí, například povrchové doly tady v okolí Ústí nad Labem.
But Ústí's steps toward cleaning up have not been without an occasional step back. The city has been in the news in recent months because a chemical plant has had 4 leaks of potentially harmful chemicals this year. Another issue is heating.
I když určitě i v té čistotě tam možno ještě lecos udělat.
There are still a lot of things to do. We are aware of that. As far as the heating, we have also done a lot to the heating in residential houses. Mainly, many houses are connected to central heating or gas heating. There's a problem with the heating because of the increasing price of natural gas. And many people now turn back to burning coal.
Although the Czech side of the former Black Triangle has not made a full recovery from its environmental nosedive, for Mirka Blaškova, the success means it's no longer a region that residents long to escape.
It's not only the brown coal deposit, the big density of industry before the high pollution, but also the area where are the one national park and protection area. It means a lot of nature beauties. In this time, I think the most of people are very happy to stay here.
Talking Point this week was presented by Eric Martin. And we're just about out of time here on Radio Prague for today. Please do get in touch with us if you'd like to comment upon any of our programmes. The email address is english@radio.cz. Once again, english@radio.cz. Plus, we have a website with lots of information there about life here in the Czech Republic and, of course, about our programmes. And you can even look at the pictures of the presenters online as well. The address for that is www.radio.cz/English, and for those multilinguists among us, there are links to the other language sections there as well. That's it from me, Peter Smith. Until next time, bye bye.
Ici Radio Prague, programme en langue française des émissions internationales de la radio tchèque, Onde Courte. Pour bénéficier d'une agréable réception, voici la grille de nos horaires en temps universel et fréquence en kilohertz. Europe, 5930, 7345. 8h30, 8h57. Europe, 9860, 11600. 17h30, 17h57. Europe, Afrique Centre, 5930, 15710. 19h30, 19h57. Europe, Afrique Ouest, 5930, 9430, 23h, 23h27. Amérique du Nord, 5930, 7345. Nous vous invitons à l'écoute sur le web. Pour cela, veuillez vous connecter au site www.radio.cz/français. Radio Prague est aussi sur le satellite. Vous trouverez toutes les informations sur notre site www.radio.cz/français.